Greetings, my friends. Welcome to the next episode of the Min Mob Podcast. Jason here, joined by my buddy Alex across the pond in Germany. We're going to jump into the usual things, but actually this week we're going to pick up where we left off on last week's spaces since we had some technical difficulties. And I know Alex had some topics that he wanted to dive into and wasn't able to, so we'll start there, man. How you doing?
I'm doing great. I'm happy that we found the time to jump on the episode today, obviously with a one-day delay, unfortunately. But yeah, we will definitely jump into all the topics we wanted to speak about on Spaces. And I just found, because usually we jump into crypto in the very beginning when we speak about or when we start Spaces. And there was like one thing that made headlines, and I'm not even sure if you saw that. But it's kind of related to crypto and maybe even NFTs, because when we speak about the utility of NFTs, game assets are always like, you know, something people speak about, right? Like you have assets in games that can be tokenized. You can buy them, you can sell them. They're actually big markets in many games, right? So last week we got news that Meta, the company, is shutting down its metaverse. And I think it already spent like $80 billion on it. And they announced that they're shutting it down. Not enough users, or I'm not sure if they actually mentioned the reasons, but it's most likely because of that. What do we think about that? I mean, I remember that, like, even if you look at crypto projects, there have been really big projects, you know, doing metaverses, like Decentraland, Sandbox. It's just like a couple of names. Do you think the metaverse is dead, and do you think it's having any kind of impact on crypto projects or even on NFTs?
I don't know. I mean, I think a lot of that stuff has just a really long way to go before anything significant really happens. Mm. So, you know, there's going to be a lot of failures. There's going to be a lot of sort of, you know, trial and error to get to the place where it's really usable and user-friendly, and it doesn't give you a headache, you know, when you're wearing these glasses or what have you, and exploring these worlds. So, I mean, there's just a long way to go, and I think this is just part of it. And I think if you, you know, I think actually this is a really great lesson that we could learn in business and in creation, and that is, like, no matter what your sunk cost is, if something isn't working, you should stop doing it, you know? You see this all the time, mm-hmm, with NFT projects beating their heads against the walls on, you know, some dying chain somewhere that's never going to go anywhere or do anything. And the reasoning for doing it is really no reasoning at all. It's just that, well, we've been here. We've got all this investment going on here. We've got all this time sunk, this money sunk. And yet here's Facebook, who's invested literal billions of dollars into this one project. And they're like, well, no, we're going to pull the plug. So, like, if Facebook can pull the plug on multi-billion dollar project, you know, surely you can walk away from your little NFT project that's dying on Polygon somewhere, you know, like, just move chains, do whatever. But I mean, I think that's really what I take from this, rather than anything tech related at all. It's just like, learn the business lesson here. Sunk costs are real. But the longer you stick around and sink more into them, the more you lose, right? So, you know, take a page from the Zucks book, right? And do the right thing.
Yeah, absolutely. But I mean, when I thought about the metaverse in general, and I think I tried some of them, that some were even like browser based, so you didn't even have to like download any kind of application, and I checked that out. And you know, back then in 2022, 2023, it looked like the metaverse is almost like destined for NFTs. Like NFTs are so, can have such a big use case in the metaverse, you know, getting like, I don't know, outfits and everything tokenized. And it seemed like the next big thing. And it died like suddenly, right? Like it doesn't look like anyone has any interest anymore into the metaverse. And right now I feel like the narrative is more, you know, going in the like the artificial intelligence direction, and now that's like the big thing. And yeah, I mean, obviously AI has a completely different use case for humanity, of course, but do you think like AI was like a big topic in the crypto space as well, right? Like there were so many AI projects and do you think this is something that can stop suddenly as well?
You mean like in terms of shifting gears from like an AI project that's not working?
Yeah, I mean, obviously AI is not going to die, right? Like that evolves in a really quick pace and that gets better every day and people can use it. But I feel like the crypto narrative that they're like I'm not even sure if that was there was like a necessity that it's like connected to crypto, right? There probably wasn't. So, but it looks like, especially in the crypto markets, people have always needed to have narratives, right? Like in the very beginning of the cycle, it was meme coins. Then it shifted to AI, and I feel like there is kind of the tendency that all this is going to die. And I mean, we mentioned that all the times, right? Like everything consolidates to quality. And do you think there will be narratives in the future?
Oh yeah, for sure. I mean, as long as you have humans and human psychology, you're going to need narrative. You're going to need story. I mean, this is how we perpetuate knowledge, you know, and how we sort of draw people into our world. I mean, the most education, you know, rich content is really the best content that tells a story, to be honest with you. You know, like you can take a history class and have it be taught by someone who's so boring that you just literally want to pull your hair out. Or you could take a history class by someone who embodies the characters and tells the story and makes it interesting, right? So, I mean, both of those things are true, but only one of them is more effective, right? So, you know, when it comes to any project or service or, you know, organization, build out, whatever you want to call it, like when it comes to any of that, story matters. You know, I mean, it takes story to bring people on board. It takes story to draw people in. All of these things are going to need to exist. And, you know, the story of sort of AI and crypto or utilities and crypto or art and crypto or, you know, whatever pairing you want to create, these are basically just sort, these are basically unnecessary in a lot of ways. Like it's not necessary to tie the metaverse to blockchain. Like you said, it's not necessary at all. Yeah. And it's not necessary to tie anything specifically to blockchain because you could just use any database. But the question in terms of like, will the market accept it comes down to story first and then value proposition second. So the story will draw you in and it might cause you to take a look and get you to use a specific thing. But then if you use it and it sucks, you're going to be like, eh, this sucks. Like the story is bullshit. The story doesn't tell the truth. Therefore, I'm out of here. I'm going to do something else. And I mean, this is the story of all products from the since the beginning of time, right? I mean, if you can go all the way back to like, you know, ancient Greece, where, you know, you had merchants who would transport like purple dye across the Mediterranean Sea. You know, in fact, one of the founders of the Stoic school, you know, was basically shipwrecked and lost his purple dye. You know, purple dye was sought after by the ruling classes because it basically represented wealth and royalty, and not everyone could afford it or use it. And, you know, it was made from like sea slugs that, you know, basically slaves would smash and take their blood and turn into purple dye. And so the story was like, if you could afford, you know, to dye your clothes purple, that meant that you had significance and status and wealth in the community, right? That's the story of it, right? But I mean, today, like if you wear a purple shirt, nobody gives a shit. everyone can, you know, afford purple clothes, so it doesn't matter anymore, right? But even today, that sort of story is still attached to that little bit of technology of dye. And if you go and you look through, you know, photos or paintings of royal characters, there's always like some form of dark blue purple in there, right? Because it was very hard to come by back in the day.
Yeah, good point. Absolutely. I like the comparison, definitely. There was actually big news today, and I didn't really want to speak about that because I'm too dumb to understand. But I'll admit it here, and maybe you can clarify things for me. So I'm not sure if you've read that, but the USDC stablecoin issuer Circle, their stock crashed 18% today. So when I read that, I tried to find, you know, a reason for that. And I think the reason is that the Clarity Act deal signals that there will not be any yield on stablecoin balances. And this that weakens obviously a key part of you know the bull case by making USDC harder to evolve from a payments utility into a real store of value product. But when I read that, like, first of all, USDC stablecoin issuer, I have no idea what that even means. Obviously, they are able to mint USDC or USDT or whatever. And like, I didn't even know until then that until I read that, that there are like I don't even know how USDC is being made, to be honest. And I kind of feel ashamed because I should know. But is it like, do you have different companies like these issuers and you have to pay real money and they'll just, you know, mint the USDC tokens or USDT tokens? Do you know that? You should know that, right?
Well, I know a little bit about it. So, you know, Circle, who basically runs USDC, remember how this is set up, mm-hmm. right? They make the majority of their income from interest on cash, not on USDC.
Yeah.
Okay. So if you hold... you know, like 10 USDC, then basically what Circle is doing is they're guaranteeing that they have 10 US dollars to back it up. So they're basically trying to back it up one mm-hmm. for one, right? And that's how they're able to maintain the peg, right? Like the peg to USDC to the dollar is one for one. And so the way that Circle makes money, almost 100% of the revenue comes from the interest they earn on the dollars that they hold. So if the Federal Reserve mm-hmm. decides to drop interest rates, which is one of the things that they are expected to do, then that basically means that Circle is going to be able to make less interest on the cash that they hold. Does that make sense? And so if they can't make interest on the cash that they hold, then they can't be as profitable, which means that their stock is going to get sold, right? So this was just all recently announced, right? This a lot of this stuff with the treasuries and the treasuries that back the USDC okay, reserves, yeah. right? So if the interest rates come down, Circle loses income, which means that their stock can't be as valuable as it was yesterday. Does that make sense?
It absolutely does. And I still got two questions. So Circle is the only company like issuing USDC, right? So they are basically the only company who can mint USDC, right?
Yeah, as far as I know, like Circle, USDC, okay. You know, issued by Circle, like USD coin or whatever, is issued by Circle primarily. And mm-hmm. they are the chosen issuer of it, right? Like, so like they have a contract that basically states that they're going to hold these one-to-one reserves. And because they're a third-party company, they're the only ones who can emit USDC, right? Because they're the only ones who are guaranteeing the one-to-one peg.
Yeah, absolutely. Like they do, but is there any kind of control mechanism? Because I feel like, is it like blockchain-wise that they basically have the, that they are the only ones who have the, it's not called update authority when you have a token, right? But they are the only ones able to mint USDC, I guess. But like, is that being controlled in any way? Do you know?
Well, I mean, if you just look at the verbiage, like the verbiage tells you that they hold, you know, cash or basically equities or, I'm sorry, it wouldn't be equities. It'd probably be securities like bonds, like debt, basically. Mm-hmm. Or I guess it could be anything that's securitized, really. Like, it depends on how you read their documentation. But, like, whatever securities that they hold, they can only issue one USDC token for $1 worth of that security, right? So it has to be maintained.
And it's public what they have, right?
That
makes sense, obviously, yeah. Because we can't...
It's public to the extent that they have to account for the verbiage in their documentation. And it's public in the extent mm-hmm. that they are a public company, right? So I'm sure there's things behind the scenes that we can't know or won't know. But based on the mechanisms that we do understand, yeah. this is kind of how it works. And they are the only company, regardless of blockchain or entity or partnership, they're the only company that holds this specific one-to-one reserve licensing.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, in the end, it's actually quite interesting because I never thought about where stablecoins are coming from. But now it makes sense. And now it even makes more sense that there are actually so many different projects suddenly issuing stable coins. Like I think Binance has one. There's obviously USDT, and but what was actually like the cause? Like maybe you can explain me why, like Luna was not able to back its stablecoin, or what was happening there?
Well, Luna's a totally different animal, and this has to do with like front running the market. Completely different thing altogether. So you could just go to Grok and look up like the circumstances around Luna. It's kind of a long story, but basically, you know, one seller who held a massive amount ended up selling into like a weak market, or basically front run the market, and that created a panic, which caused basically the Luna token to sort of, or I'm sorry, Luna's assets to sort of be decoupled. But I mean, that's a completely different scenario. Completely different scenario altogether.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Luna suddenly collapsed, and I think there was no way back. But yeah, interesting. As we are unfortunately lacking time a little bit today, let's jump into what's going on in the Goodfellas world. And there are plenty of things. The most important one is, of course, the drop we will have on Friday by none other than Nika. The piece is called Prayer. You guys have probably seen the description on X already. She wrote a beautiful description and even like some additional information from her artist perspective. And she is going to join us on Friday on Spaces and speak a little bit about her art. And it's always great to have an artist on Spaces, right? Like we've been speaking about arts so many times, and you know, getting their kind of point of views and opinions on everything that's going on, and you know, what they think about like I don't know, AI art, or what they think about you know, the current condition of the market, where does the market go. It's always like great to see all these different you know, personalities and opinions. So I'm really looking forward to that, and I'm looking forward to the mint, of course. 21 editions. Mint price is going to be the same as always, 0.21 sol. One piece is bearing Nika's signature / logo. So you know the drill. We look forward to the mint. This is going to be great. And on top of that, we are currently seeking to, well, that's Jason, that's obviously done on your end. So do you want to jump a little bit into what you've been doing, you know, in order to grow our IP rights business?
You mean in terms of acquisitions? I mean, we could talk a little bit about that if you want to. Yeah, we've got basically...
Absolutely.
Well, you know, obviously before we jumped on the mic today, we were on the call with Francois, or Francie, as he said he preferred to be called, who did the original artwork for Art of Mob, which we acquired and then... And signed a contract with, and then reminted as Goodfellas. And we're going to have him doing some updates and revamps on that art, but also we're going to have him doing some new stuff. And just part of that conversation, you know, basically led to the question of, you know, hey, what else is, you know, have you done, because his work is so good? Like, what else have you done in the marketplace that's basically just out there dying on the vine, or, you know, has been abandoned, or whatever the case may be? You know, he said, you know, I have like 7 collections out there that really nothing's happening for, or nothing's being done with. So that right there, like, opened the door to have a conversation around like 7 collections of artwork. And if it's all by him, you know, it's going to be done really well because he's so good. And he doesn't have any documentation with the, you know, founders of these projects, like we've talked about before, where they actually purchased anything from him. And so that artwork is not tied to those founders, unless he expressly conveyed that to them, right? Unless that has been sort of outlined somewhere and there's been a contract between the two and there's been money that's changed hands. And in most cases, a lot of these artists you'll find have never done any of this stuff. It's just like, we're going to build it on the fly and we'll just give it to you. And then maybe sort of kind of, hopefully at some point in the future, we'll get paid, right? So, you know, when you have these conversations, you realize how shaky this marketplace is. And all of those collections could be basically reminted and revamped and brought into, you know, the Goodfellas fold, so to speak, so that they have a safe haven where they can live forever and be cared for and collected by people who actually care about the work and want to see it succeed. So this is just like, I'm just illustrating the point of like how bad and how shaky this marketplace is in terms of like these original NFT projects, right? Most of them, if not all of them, outside of the very few who have expressly granted you IP rights, do you actually have permission to use, display, or do any work with at all? So, you know, in addition to that, I'm in conversations with several other people, one specifically coming from Polygon. There's three collections that I'm trying to acquire, and I hope to have that deal closed before the end of the week. And if that happens, then we'll be able to basically bring that artwork onto Solana and remint it into a group of collectors who actually care about the work. And it's really cool. It's like old school cool, you know, like that old school cool PFP NFT artwork that is basically going to be sought after as the collectibles market evolves and people want the earlier, you know, and earlier stuff, you know, just like they do with cars or comics or whatever they collect. So I'm pretty stoked to see if we can get that deal done. If we do, you know, I'll drop some information. Hopefully we'll have something done on that this week. I'm supposed to get access to those contracts. They're on Polygon. Later this week. So we'll see what happens with that. But basically, you know, aside from what's happening with Cosmonica or Cosmonica, however you want to say it, her piece, Prayer, there's going to be a bonus drop as well, left over from Anna Shee's Seven Dawns drop that we never done. So I'll have both of those ready to rock. And then hopefully we'll have some more news on even more art coming down the line as well. And then, of course, with Francie coming back in to do some work on the OG stuff, there's just tons and tons to process and get through. So, I mean, in a nutshell, without going too deep, that's kind of where all that's at.
Yeah, really cool. And regarding Francie, man, we asked him what we should call him, and we still don't know. But let's stick to Francie. Yeah, it's like I'm so happy that he's back, and he gave us an impression of the collections he created before. And one thing that's really interesting is that he mentioned that he does art, like he's not really doing any NFT art right now anymore, but he does art in his real life. Like he's like doing art for brandings and doing graphics and all that stuff. And I'd love to have him on Spaces as well and speak about that, right? Like, is that different for you? Like, do you feel like any artists we've worked with in the space so far could do or be like some sort of graphic designer in the real world and do that? Or do you feel like that's two different skills?
Yeah, I think there are a few that could and some that already are. I mean, like Christine from Scarce Creatures comes to mind. Like, she already does that work. I mean, you can tell in her illustrative work mm-hmm. that's her background. And when you look at her pieces, it's not like some of the other trash you see on like Polygon where it's just sort of randomly thrown together or it's just the same character over and over and over and over again. Like her pieces, when you look at them, mm-hmm. When you break them down, there's a story in the piece. And this is something that a good illustrator is really good at conveying. So you can take a very simple shape or a very simple color combination with a simple set of shapes and then convey a story. And, you know, the people who do that, I find, are the best illustrators or the best storytellers. You know, they generally do work in the real world because they have to do that to get jobs. Like when you're doing logo work or branding design, you know, a lot of that work needs to tell a story in addition to being really, really well done. And then, of course, there's a lot of technicians in the NFT world who do focus on specific characters or do focus on specific styles. And they could make the transition if they chose to. So, you know, I mean, it could flow both ways, but the people who have the skill set already stand out because it shows up in the work that you see. You know, it's really easy to see.
Yeah, absolutely. And as I said, I'm really looking forward to see more art coming from Francis for the male badge. It's so great that, you know, he's obviously familiar with the art style and he's going to, I think we're going to see some great new traits for the male version. And yeah, unfortunately, I got an appointment coming up. So this should be it for today. Short one, but I hope you guys enjoyed it. We look forward to see you guys around on Friday. Let's chat art, man. It's the greatest topic. Let's speak a little bit about art. Let's chat with Nika and see what kind of artist she is, what like where she comes from, and all that stuff. It's always so great to, you know, have those people around. And yeah, I hope you guys, I hope you guys show up. And I'm looking forward to the spaces. Hope everyone out there has a great week, and we'll see you guys on Friday. Until then, bye bye.
Absolutely. Take care, guys. Have a good one.